3, triple option with RBKD. We're going to go more zone read, speed option as we have lost BK. BK is heading out to Lake Travis. Don't forget, Friday Night Flex coming up at 6:30. Snoop, that's snoop. When we'll be done. Snoop, snoop, give him a shout out. Lake Travis and Austin High. Maybe not the official MILF Bowl, but it's pretty damn close. So BK is all decked out for that. He'll have the call. So will Mark Koenig and also Bucky Godbolt. That'll be here on the Horn. If you want to get to the Horn app, you can listen to BK. And we've done such a great job.
Oh, we try to clear the
with traffic, and then also Don does a hell of a job. But then also with high school football coverage. So don't go anywhere tonight. Rod, it's great for us, too, because we're old men. I'm out here throwing my tennis ball and throwing my arm out. But usually Friday night, we're not hitting Cain and Abel's like we used to. So it's been
unfortunately.
We're not. Yeah, you're engaged now, too. It's fun to kind of flip the dial and have that app and be able to listen to all the different games.
Oh, I love the Flex ATX. You should follow, first of all, follow Flex ATX on Twitter.
It's a good follow.
It's a great follow on Twitter. It'll give you kind of the Cliff Notes version of everything you need to know about Central Texas high school sports. Not only football, but of course, everybody cares about what's happening in the football realm. And of course, my man Snoop, when he's coming up next, but when, 6:30?
Yeah, 6:30.
6:30. He gives you a great rundown. And I love it because Snoop, like me, he talks fast, but he gives you a ton of information.
Yeah.
Gets it all to you. And you really kind of get your high school football fix all there in one. And if you have a game that, ooh, you're looking forward to this game or you want to watch this player, then, of course, you know, you can go use the high school football network that we've built up. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good. So Lake Travis, the power, we obviously know how tough they are
Bucky
to beat.
Bucky Godbolt,
the color man for Lake Travis. But Austin High has got Charles Wright, the Texas commit. And he's been flinging it around. Love Rosie, Mike Rosenthal, their head coach. So this could be a high-scoring game. So you want to tune in to that. We're going to take you all the way up a little bit more than an hour as we've got all the way till 6:30 where we get to that Friday night flex. Let's get back to Texas and Baylor a little bit. Maybe a little bit of an Eyes of Texas update. There's not much of an update, but let's get back to the game right now, Rod, because we had Tim Watkins from Bears Illustrated on. If you want to get to hornfm.com, you can podcast everything. That was at 4 o'clock. And you know, this is strange. I'm curious to get your take as a player. Whenever you're trying to scout another team and there's not a lot on tape, that can sometimes be a positive. It can benefit you, and sometimes it can't. In this case, you've got a new coaching staff, a new offensive coordinator, limited film. You think that all their personnel is going to be there. From all the reports we've had, they've been very good with COVID, and they've had zero positive tests. But Texas is trying to figure out themselves as they're also trying to scout someone where there's not a lot of stuff on them.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of Malcolm Gladwell, the book. It's called Thin Slicing. And that's exactly what you're going to be doing here, a lot of thin slicing. But, you know, it could work out to be advantageous for Texas, right? You could, come up with a very kind of thin slice game plan, if you will, that's really effective. And I'll look at some of the things that I found. My man Matt Butler, who does a great job breaking down stats and trends. He texted me something last night that we were texting back and forth about Charlie Brewer and why a lot of people think Charlie Brewer's hurt. And, you know, if you look at it, I think Texas is going to be on the, I think, disadvantageous end of this small sample size. And the only reason that doesn't mean they're going to lose. Just means I don't think they're going to get a coaching advantage out of this small sample size and them trying to scout Baylor through the two games they have there and a new coaching staff. And the reason I say this is because Tom Herman is really bad at self-scouting. He's terrible at scouting his own damn team, who he's been around. I was just talking about how Tom Herman, we were complaining that Tom Herman needs to teach the wide receivers the scramble drill in 2017, watching Sam Ellinger scramble versus USC.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they got to be better at the scramble drill. And they were better in 2017 than they are now, because now they're terrible at the scramble drill. Just think, try to remember the last time you saw Sam Ellinger scramble, who scrambles, by the way, more than any quarterback in the Big 12, and actually complete a pass. He has a 22 Pro Football Focus grade when he is scrambling outside the pocket, passing to throw. Spencer Rattler's at 92, right? So they practice that. That's mostly on the receivers. That's on Tom Herman. He's bad at self-scouting, and they're bad at halftime adjustments, right? Bad until coming out in the third quarter. Bad at fourth quarter adjustments, really, too, because losing going into the fourth quarter, he has a really terrible record. My point being, he's bad at adjustments, and he's bad at scouting. So why the hell would I think with two games he'd sort of come up with a great game plan? Now, maybe because of the two games, games, he has a small sample size, and maybe that helps him because he's been so bad with a larger sample size than a smaller sample size actually helps him. I have no idea. There's no reason for me to think he's going to get an advantage, though.
No, you're right. This. Don't tell me who I am if you can't figure out who you are.
He says they don't have an
identity.
That's
what the scouting is.
You're in your fourth year with a senior quarterback. We don't know what our identity is. Good Lord. So, yeah.
So, Charlie can become the only the second player in Baylor history to lead the team in passing yards for four straight years. That was J.J. Joe. God, that brings it back.
What's that name?
J.J. Joe, who was more of an option quarterback.
What year was that?
Brother, number 13.
What a great
90
name.
90 to 93.
He should have been a better player with a name like that.
Yeah,
J.J. Joe.
He was pretty good. They had Robert Strait. They ran a lot of option. But J.J. Joe led them in passing yards for four straight years. But you guys are right. Charlie, there were questions about the concussions after last year. Should this kid even play? Phenomenal family. Did not get a Texas ride. We know that. But the dad and the whole family is just awesome. So he's an easy guy to root for, and you worry about his overall health. But what we're talking about now is a little different, Rod, and you can see it. I definitely saw it in the West Virginia game. He did not have a blazing arm to begin with, and all of a sudden you take that away a little bit. Texas should not be worried about his arm. I thought one thing that Tim brought up during the interview, which was really smart, he does a lot of his good work and has in his career across the middle, and that takes some time to set up. This is where Joseph Osai and this Texas pass rush should be able to get to an offensive line that has had some problems. That's got to be something that Texas is looking at and thinking, we can do this, and we need to do this.
Yeah, they've had a tough time protecting Charlie Brewer. They've allowed six sacks, I believe, in those two games. And you're right, it does take time for things to develop in terms of the passing progressions and the route tree when you're going over the middle in the short to intermediate range. And they want to run a lot of crossing routes, a lot of drags, a lot of mesh point stuff. They want to do it out of bunch formations, and Tim Watkins talked about that and made a really good point. I'll just say this. If you're Texas and you're game planning, like I said, you're thin slicing. If you look at where Charlie Brewer has been able to complete passes, and you're completely right, he likes to be over the middle and he likes that short intermediate area. That's good news and bad news for Charlie Brewer. Good news is he doesn't throw the ball deep. That's why all the Baylor fans think that he's hurt. He's at zero completions of 20-plus yards down the field. Zero.
That's crazy.
He's only attempted three. He doesn't even really attempt to throw deep very often, all right? And actually, how about this? On the right side of the field, he also is 0-for. He's 0-for-2 throwing 10 yards or more down the field on the right side of the
right
field.
Right side.
So he's 3-of-5 on the right side of the field, but that's only for 11 yards. So they're like behind the line of scrimmage or right at the line of scrimmage within 5 yards of line scrimmage. So he's not throwing the ball deep, and he's not throwing it deep down the right side, using the right side of the field. So if you're thin slicing, you might want to think about loading the box really early on, bringing your safeties down, because the bad news is Charlie Brewer loves to attack the middle of the field. That's where he's most effective. Well, where are you weakest in pass coverage? Short intermediate area of the field, because your linebackers are terrible there. So if you look at Charlie Brewer, the middle of the field, he's set under 20 yards because he hadn't completed anything above 20 yards. He's 17 of 25 under 20 yards for 261 yards, three touchdowns, one interception, working the middle of the field. That's where Texas is weakest at linebackers. So that's why I think they're going to attack, because they're used to attacking there anywhere. The left side of the field, he actually favors that a little bit more, too. I think on the left side, you start looking at it, and he's been a little bit more effective there. From the 0 to 10-yard range, he's 8 of 10. From the 10 to 20-yard range, obviously nothing has been completed above 20 yards. He's 3 of 4. So he likes that left side over there. Maybe that's the injury working. Maybe he just likes that. Maybe that's just the way the progression's working out in this offense. And he likes the middle of the field. Doesn't like the right side. Doesn't like it deep. So if I'm Texas, I'm loading the box with those safeties early on. I'm going to force him to beat me throwing to my corners and throwing to my corners deep. I want my corners up playing bump and run. And if you're going to beat me, you're going to beat me doing something you ain't done all year long. I want you to throw it deep. I want you to show me that you're Charlie Brewer's got zip on the ball. Because I've talked to every insider at Baylor, and they all say the last 8-9 games since the injuries have accumulated, he ain't the same player. Can't throw it deep, don't have the zip. he's going to beat me throwing that way. I'm not going to let him have the middle of the field. You let him have the middle of the field and you ain't been watching film.
Yeah.
Or you ain't been paying attention to Pro Football Focus.
Right.
Get a subscription. I'll pay for it, Tom Herman. You know what I mean?
It's worth it.
Like, it's worth it. It tells you pretty much he ain't throwing it deep and he ain't throwing to the right side of the field. So I would try split coverage too. Sometimes play zone to his left and man to his right.
Do you roll coverage to the left side?
Yeah, you got roll coverage over there. Exactly. Right? There are little things you can do to try to give yourself an advantage if he's going to be that obvious. You know what I mean? And he's going to be that compartmentalized in his passing game.
Fantastic stuff there. And that's something that you should definitely be looking at tomorrow at 2:30 when this thing gets going. Don't forget, pregame will start at 10:30. You got the watch party. Then Rod and I will have postgame right here on the horn. Couple notes here. Gary Bohannon, who's their backup, 6'3", 221, the one we saw in the Big 12 championship game.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a pretty good arm. And
yeah,
so, I mean, and look, I'm not trying to say, I'm just saying that, that be ready for that, that you've got to be able to adjust that game plan if he does come into this game. Tyquan Thornton is their big guy, and I mean that 6'3", 180. He hasn't done a lot, but he's going to be someone that I'm curious if they match him up with a smaller guy like DeShawn Jamison. These cornerbacks, unfortunately, probably will get tested a little bit, but it'll probably be intermediately, like you said. R.J. Sneed is another guy that can go for them.
Yeah, that's my concern. I'll give you the numbers about the corners. And in this game plan, because of what you mentioned, how Charlie Brewer loves that middle of the field, loves working that short intermediate area, and that's where he's comfortable, I'm not going to let him even get into a comfort zone. Also because Larry Fedora loves the RPOs, and that's the sweet spot for the RPOs, right?
Yeah.
Right there. And those little pop pass areas on that skinny post. So I would take that away, but as we've seen, when you bring those safeties down to the box, it exposes your corners. Here are the numbers for the cornerbacks when they have been targeted in the last three games. And I went and looked at it. They've been 44 targets at the corners in the last three games, and they only have 4 PBUs. That's a problem.
Wow.
That's a problem.
They're
not making enough plays on the ball. There were 28 receptions allowed out of those 44 targets for 351 yards, 2 pass interference calls, 7 explosive plays, which means you are giving up an explosive play or a pass interference call every 4.8 targets. So if I target those corners at least 5 times, it will result in a defensive pass interference call or an explosive play. That has been the case the last 3 weeks. That's pretty good odds. I'll just keep throwing at it up and just keep chunking it at them. All right.
What did DKR say? When you throw the ball, two bad things can happen. Well, that's one of those. You throw the ball, 2 good things can happen.
2 good things can happen. So they got to start. The problem is, listen, you're going to get beat. I got beat. Longhorn Network plays games all the time where Rod B gets beat. Okay. It happens. You got to start making more plays on the ball, though. You're going to get beat. That's Adam Moore's getting beat, too, but he's making plays on the ball, too.
Yeah.
So you're going to get beat, but they're not making only 4 PBUs and 44 targets.
Okay.
Got to make more plays on the
ball. Let me ask you, is your guy. He's DB high. That's why I thought Jamison was in there. What are you seeing from DeShawn? Because, I mean, I thought he was going to get beat, but I thought he's still going to make some plays because it just eyeball-wise, he looked like the best playmaker they had in the secondary last year.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I anticipated him making more plays on the ball, and he hasn't. Strangely enough, Texas is still leading the Big 12 right now in forced turnovers, and that's without DeShawn Jamison, who may be your most ball hockeyist player in the back end, right? The most opportunistic. So I'm with you. I think he's just got to get in the groove. He made a play on the ball, got a PBU late against Oklahoma in that game. So he's still battling. I think the corners are just struggling with the technique of playing bump and run and then being able to put themselves in a position to make a play on the ball later. So I think they're gonna get better. In fact, I've already noticed them getting better. I'll take that. I've noticed them against Oklahoma. They were pretty good holding up against Oklahoma. Oklahoma schemed a lot of really good things against them. They put the wide receivers in the slot and put the running backs on the outside so they can get Jalen Green on a two-way go, and they got him a couple of times. Remember they put the tight end, inline tight end, by himself, Stogner.
Stogner,
they went
trips
to the opposite side.
They
and
messed with Mims one time on
and
that.
They got a 22-yard reception on John Jamison like that, and then they got a touchdown on Jalen Green like that. So Oklahoma early on couldn't just beat Texas straight up with their wide receivers. They got to the point they had to scheme them open. That's progress. It's baby steps, but that's progress.
All right, it's good to hear some progress there. Hey, if you're looking to watch any of these games, Tomorrow, maybe a little bit of a quick turnaround, but college football, pro football, the rest of the year, you got to get to AV Consultations. Audiovisual Consultations has been doing it the right way since 1988. They're going to set up your perfect home theater. I don't care if you want to blow it out, make it huge, you want to have your own movie theater. They can do that. If you get to AV Consultations and look at the gallery, you'll see some of the work they've done. They'll also customize everything, which is really cool. So a custom design of the theater, that includes decorative accessories, also furniture. Heck, they're going to get a cabinet maker to design it for you. So you really can customize it to your liking. While you got them there, go ahead and get a surveillance system set up as well. Cameras anywhere you want. You can check it worldwide via the internet. They take audio very seriously as well. I'm telling you, it's the total package. You're going to save five or six phone calls by just giving them a call at 512-255-8678 or avconsultations.com. So, Rod, the Baylor offensive line, with the way they played through two games, you would think Texas would have an edge with their defensive line.
Yeah.
One of the things you just talked about, Lincoln scheming things up, he also was able to really control the clock, as we talked about earlier, and run the football. Mm. It does start stopping two pretty good running backs. I was glad you asked that question earlier. Yeah, because Treston Ebner is can really go. He's 5'11", 208. They've got two seniors to go with John Lovett. And I was reading the same thing you were from Baylor fans. Baylor fans want to see him more involved outside of just kickoff returns.
Yeah, Dave Aranda said it too. He said it, I believe the conversation he had with Craig is maybe where I heard it, but he said, we got to get that guy more involved. He's got to get the ball. And he had six rushes against West Virginia. They only ran it 27 times, I believe, against West Virginia total, and he only had six rushes. That guy who had two kickoff returns for touchdowns, he's got to get more involved. So I expect him in the screen game. Think about it. You want to put Texas linebackers in conflict. RPOs will do that, and they're going to use a ton of RPOs. They're going to use a ton of drag routes, mesh concepts, right? Mm-hmm. So they can get those linebackers in coverage conflicts. But also, screen game with Ebner out in the flats, trying to get him in space, and also trying to get him matched up on a linebacker, period. It's just in coverage. If I see Ebner with one of those Texas linebackers covering him, I'd give it a shot. Now, Overshown, that's the one you can kind of win with. But either way, Ebner is you saw him on those kickoff returns. He's a hell of a skill player.
He really is.
I mean, David Randa compared him to Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
And wow, said okay.
That honestly, he's one of those guys.
Do
I
everything.
Could see him, yeah, putting him in a slot and just letting him be a slot wide receiver. He said, I would compare him to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And honestly, there's some of that in there. He's got a little frame for some of that. There's some of that there.
And Aranda would know that because he had to go up against Clyde Edwards-Helaire last year. So, yeah, I would not lay the 9 or 8.5. But do you have a feel right now as we're kind of getting closer?
Oof. Texas should beat them by double digits.
We're doing our picks at 6 o'clock, so we'll get to that at some point.
Texas should beat them by double digits, man. They should. But shoulda, woulda, coulda, right? And Jeff Howe has the great stat that when Tom Herman is favored by at least 6 points, at least a touchdown in Big 12 play, he's 4-9-1 against the spread, 2 outright losses. So, yeah, they're going to win, but they're not going to cover. They're not going to cover because
I didn't pick him to either.
It's too easy to defend Texas right now. That's why Tom Herman wants to get a running game going, because you can play bump and run with those corners. And by the way, those corners are pretty damn good. Those corners are better than you think. The corners are probably as good, if not better, than Oklahoma's corners.
Kalen Barnes and then Raleigh Tejada is a guy we've seen before. He's good. He's smaller.
Good.
They mentioned Barnes. Barnes is 6 feet, 185, and he can run.
He's
they really like
guy.
Him. Yeah. Heading into the game, they are better than Oklahoma's corners.
And we know
gave Texas fits.
Yeah, and you already said it. Dave Aranda, you said it a couple of days ago. Dave Aranda from LSU. Nobody played more man-to-man than LSU. Nobody played more bump and run than LSU now. He doesn't have Derek Stingley.
He twisted and stunted a bunch.
So they're going to play bump and run. They're going to twist and stun up front, and they're going to put a spy. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's Terrell Bernard, sometimes their best player, depending on the situation, on Sam Ehlinger. And to me, that stops the wide receivers on the outside, disrupts that timing. That means Sam's going to give up on the route progression sooner. The offensive line still can't block the twist and stun, so you're not going to have enough time to find the open H receiver, even if you do, you know, actually have a healthy H receiver. And then you got the spy, and the spy is the key, because the most successful, arguably the most successful offensive play, but certainly the most successful running play for Texas has been the scramble by Sam Ehlinger, averaging 10.8 yards per scramble so far this year, 195 scramble yards. If you just take Sam Ehlinger's scramble yardage, it would lead Texas rushers by 7 yards. Mm. Just his scramble yardage alone.
So not even designed runs.
Just Sam scrambling.
That's a crazy stat right there.
Rojo has 188. He's got 195 scrambling yards.
That's a crazy stat. Yeah. And, you know, when the Texas offense lines up, Sam has to find out where number two is, Bernard, because he can disrupt a lot of stuff. And I think you're right. They are going to move him around. Yep. He will be a spy at times, but they can use him almost like a safety, a defensive end, or a linebacker.
You're right.
And on the flip side, Charlie Brewer is going to look at the Texas linebackers and think, those are the guys we got to go get after.
And then 46. He better find 46.
And then 46 you better find. You're right.
Because Chris Ash did it against TCU. I got to go back and see if he did it against Oklahoma, but I believe he did it against Oklahoma too. He moved Osai around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go look at it. There are a couple of times he moves Osai inside.
Yeah.
As an inside linebacker, and then they do their own twist and stunt with him as the inside linebacker rather than a defensive end, and I loved it. Salivating. That's sexy right there.
I'm loving it too. It's almost like where he's lining up now under Chris Ash is not where he's going to end up. If he's lined up outside, they're twisting him in the middle a lot. If he's inside, they're twisting him outside.
They make those guys have to go find your best pass rusher and then get him matched up potentially on their worst blocker in the inside. I love that idea.
What do you got coming up in the rant?
We got a really good NFL game coming up, all right? You got two undefeated teams, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Tennessee Titans. I am going to break that game down every which way we can, and I'll give you a really, really great stat that should make you really, really excited about that matchup. We'll talk about that next up in Roch Rant of the Day right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, before we get into my rant of the day, I want to talk about the biggest matchup of the NFL weekend. There is a big NFL story brewing, so we got some breaking news. I believe it's good breaking news. Adam Schefter is reporting, along with Ian Rappaport's first place I saw it too, thanks to CB. CB up in Washington still hitting us up with breaking news. Antonio Brown is currently negotiating a deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, I thought Seattle.
That? Everybody thought Seattle was in the driver's seat. Apparently not. Apparently Tampa Bay jumped in. Remember, Tom Brady wanted this before the season started, and Bruce Arians put the kibosh on it and said, no, we don't want him. We don't need him. Well, now I think he has changed his tune a little bit, maybe because the offense isn't clicking like they wanted, and this is a guy that can make a difference for you. Tom Brady maybe just took 7 weeks to convince him. Whatever it is, Antonio Brown negotiating a deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as we speak. Also, I'm showing a little sub headline here that's also saying that he's discussing a deal. This is after he discussed a deal with Seattle. He's also still discussing a deal with Seattle. So apparently, it could go either way.
Okay.
They're saying here that suspension eligible to end after week 8, but also discussing deal with Seattle. So he's coming back, but now the Bucs are in the driver's seat to get him, as opposed to Seattle being in the driver's seat.
We know, I mean, boy, talk about Adden. They are all about winning now. They understand with Brady.
Yeah.
They bring in Leonard Fournette, and they obviously brought in Gronk in the offseason. But if he's ready to play, LeSean McCoy, Shady, and if you go with Evans, Godwin, and him,
ooh-wee.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, I always say this about Antonio Brown. Everybody knows how good he is. He's awesome. He hadn't played football in 2 years, but I still think he'd come back and be an impact player. He's I always say you all women are a little bit crazy. I understand, and I mean I love all women, not a little bit crazy. You don't want a woman to be crazier than she is hot.
No.
All right. That's when you get to where she's crossing the Vicky Mendoza diagonal, right? You don't want to cross that barrier. He got to the point where he was crazier than he was hot, and he was really freaking hot. He was the best receiver in the league, and still his crazy got to be too much to deal with. And no matter how hot she is, she can be a 10, but if her crazy is at a 12, we got to let you go. We got to move on. And that's where he got to the point. He was a 10, but his crazy was at a 12. He's like, come on.
It was. And all of a sudden, when you're around that crazy, the hotness wears off a little bit. For you,
it
doesn't
dissipates.
On the eyes on the outside.
Right.
But for you, it does.
Halle Berry, Jennifer Aniston. It was like, you mean you cheated on Halle Berry and Beyonce? It's like, yeah, man, she's crazy. Well, she's hot, and she's also really crazy.
Dave Justice sees Roseanne when he looks at Halle Berry now. He doesn't see what we see.
No, exactly. Well, who's the other guy? She had a, a musical guy she was engaged to. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I know who you're talking about because I'm a huge Holly Berry
guy. He was a sex addict. He said he was a sex addict and he wasn't getting enough sex from Holly Berry. And I'm like, man. That is a tough life, married to Holly Berry and addicted to sex and can't get it from Holly Berry.
I'm saying Eric Bennett.
Eric Benet. That's Benet, who it was. Yeah. Yes, that's who it was. Anyway, Holly Berry's probably going on her fourth or fifth marriage now, right? Go see how many times Holly Berry.
One,
been.
Two, three.
So she's on working on four.
Working on four.
Yeah. And no, Holly Berry goes through them, man. She's a man eater. And you know what? She can eat me alive.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't give a damn. You can eat me alive.
I'll spread the jam for you.
I will baste myself, please. All right, let's talk about the big matchup in the NFL this weekend. It is the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Tennessee Titans. So here's a stat that I found from the Associated Press. I'll give them credit for it. Undefeated teams meeting in week 7 or later. All right, this is the fifth time in the Super Bowl era where undefeated teams are meeting in week 7 or later. In the previous four showdowns, the winner went to the Super Bowl.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
1973, Minnesota, 2004, New England, 2007, New England, 2015, Denver.
So we're gonna find something out here, is what you're saying.
I'm saying, yeah, you could get some separation there. Make clarity is probably a better way to describe it. You'll get more clarity here. Here's another degenerate gambling stat for all you out there who are excited about this Pittsburgh-Tennessee matchup of 5-0 teams post week seven or later. In the Super Bowl era, underdog teams who are both at least 4-0, the underdog teams are 10-4 against the spread. So in Super Bowl era, both teams meeting are 4-0. The underdogs are 10-4 against the spread.
So take the Steelers. Because the Tennessee's a 1.5-point favorite.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Okay. It depends on. I thought I saw a line of Pittsburgh might have been the favorite.
Okay. I'm looking at one right now. Right now? Tennessee 1.5.
Okay. All right. There you go.
Almost to pick them.
There you go. No. It says whoever the underdog is. Okay. So breaking down this matchup a little bit, it's fascinating. So many elite qualities about both of these teams. Honestly, I don't know why the hell this game wasn't flexed to prime time. What is the NFL doing? The NFL.
It's on at noon.
Noon is great. NFL flexed the Cardinals and the Seahawks, which is a good game, but you got two 5-0 teams meeting up. Why not flex the Titans and the Steelers into the prime time and leave the Cardinals and the Seahawks where they are? That was crazy to me.
Which would be a good day matchup. I mean, the Cardinals are 4-2.
Yeah,
they're fun to watch. They're young.
Matchup.
It's still a quality. Seahawks are 5-0.
I don't understand that.
But you got crazy. Two 5-0 teams.
I didn't get that. But anyway, it's the noon game, so I think most of America will be tuned in to watch it. But I think primetime would have been a better slot for it. Pittsburgh leads the NFL in sacks. This is a big matchup factor here because Tennessee Titans lost Taylor Lewan, their starting left tackle. He is out for the season. And Pittsburgh leads the NFL in sacks with 24. They got two players ranked in the top 10 in sacks, Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt. And they got three in the top 12 in sacks, Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt, and Steven Tuitt. T.J. Watt, by the way, fastest ball get off so far this year in the NFL. He is flying off the football.
You just can't put his hand down. That's why you guys couldn't draft him.
Oh, God. Ridiculous.
Is that y'all or the Cowboys?
Cowboys. Texas should have drafted them too. Pittsburgh blitz. I know the Cowboys, the hits keep coming, right? Pittsburgh blitz is 60% of the time, so they blitz a ton, and obviously they get home a lot. Now, here's the key. If you are Tennessee, I expect them to pass even less with their starting left tackle, Taylor Lewan, out. You want to defuse the blitz. You want to defuse pressure. You got to run the football and stay ahead of schedule. And Derrick Henry is probably the best weapon in the NFL to help you do that.
Yeah.
He's leading the NFL in rushing. Got 386 yards after contact. That also leads the NFL. The second best is 316. He's got 19 broken tackles. He is just a man amongst boys, even in the NFL. But he'll be going up against the second best rush defense in the league. The Pittsburgh Steelers are allowing 66 rushing yards a game, only 3.3 yards per carry allowed. But Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams size, Cardi B size, but they will be without their starting middle linebacker, Devin Bush. He's going to be out.
That's huge.
That's huge.
I'm a huge Bush fan.
Yeah. Well,
Well, I guess I was born in the 70s. So. But no, I'm a huge Devin Bush fan. I was a big fan of his dad at Florida State, and he's that new age linebacker we talk about, Rod.
Yes, that can do everything.
Yeah, he looked like a safety at Michigan.
Yeah, exactly, but he can thump.
He can thump.
He likes the physicality. So I think that who's going to miss their starter more? Are the Tennessee Titans going to miss their starting left tackle more? Or the Pittsburgh Steelers going to miss their starting middle linebacker more?
Great question.
And you got to go up against Derrick Henry. And if I'm if I'm Tennessee, I'm running right up the gut of that Pittsburgh defense because I'm staying away from those edges because those edges are where those great pass rushers are, like T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree and Stephen Tuitt. I want to go up the gut, right up the central nervous system.
I'm totally with you on that. Also, I think you can gash them because they apply pressure from every different angle.
They do.
And they're very creative with it, and they've got individuals like that you just pointed out who can do it on their own, but that's where I'd try and gash them.
I agree with that. It's going to be key for the Tennessee Titans to stay on schedule. Here's a key stat for you. Derrick Henry on first down rushes averaging 5 yards per carry. Makes life a lot easier on Ryan Tannehill, and this is where the symbiotic relationship these two have comes to the forefront. Ryan Tannehill on second down after the 5 yards per carry average that Derrick Henry has on first down rushes. He on second and short to medium pass attempts, he is 36 of 47 this year. 77% completion percentage, second and short to medium. 441 yards, 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 144 pass rating, 9.5 yards per attempt. But they keep him in manageable downs. He can use play action pass. They can still run the ball. It keeps the defense on their heels. But if Tannehill's in third and 7+, third and long, 50% completion percentage, 5.6 yards per attempt. But he's only been in that situation 21 times this year. The least amount, or I think the fifth least in the NFL. Carson Wentz, for perspective, 42 times this year he's been in third and 7+. That's a hard life. So staying ahead of schedule is big because that means they can use the play-action pass to take their deep shots. They're second in the NFL since 2019 in play-action pass rate at 47%. Ryan Tannehill on play-action passes, 12.2 yards per attempt. 15 touchdowns, leads the NFL in all those categories since 2019. Pittsburgh, best defense in the NFL at defending the play-action pass. 57% completion percentage allowed, 38.9 QBR, lowest in the NFL versus the play-action pass.
Strength versus strength,
I love it. It's unbelievable, man. It's great. Here's something to keep in mind, too. They're both tied for first and second in turnover margin. Both have 9 takeaways. Tennessee's got 3 turnovers, and Pittsburgh's got 4. They both take care of the football. If one of these teams is turning the football over more than and the other, probably, obviously more than normal. I mean, they're both elite in that quality. If one of them is turning over the football, that can mean a long day, and it can mean bad news for that team. Big Ben's been really good at taking care of the football. First time since 2014, he has only 1 interception through the first 5 games. Also, watch Juju Smith-Schuster. And Chase Claypool, your guy from Notre Dame,
yes,
been killing it,
man. I know.
Versus Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson. It'll be good matchups to watch on the outside. And, Tannehill is going to be the key. I know we're going up against a break here, so I'll make this quick. These numbers are just mind-blowing. Ryan Tannehill, since opening day of 2019, he's leading the NFL in passer rating.
What does Adam Gase do when he was watching that?
116. Russell Wilson, by the way, run 12. Drew Brees, 112. This is since 2019. Lamar Jackson, 109. Patrick Mahomes, 105. He has higher rate. He's a better passer rating than Patrick Mahomes since 2019. He had highest yards per attempt since 2019, 8.95 for Tannehill. Dak Prescott, 8.26. Garoppolo, 8.20. Russell Wilson, 8.1. He's right now playing as well as any of those quarterbacks since 2019. Well as Mahomes, he's playing as well as Russell Wilson. I know it sounds crazy. It's not. He's leading the NFL in passer rating since he left Adam Gase at 115.4.
Statistically, after Adam Gase, he's been the best quarterback in football.
Yes. And him, I'm telling you, him and Derrick Henry, it's just something magical. And in the Titans' 17 games pre-Tannehill, Henry had 1,256 rushing yards. He's averaging more than 50 yards more per game with Tannehill in there than pre-Tannehill. Isn't that unbelievable?
It's crazy.
And it's crazy.
It just doesn't. I never would have guessed that. You could have told me that he would have gotten his career back on track, and I would have bought that. But the numbers you've given really this whole week have been fantastic on that. And that's why I said, statistically, if you look at everything, not just that, he's been the best quarterback since Gase.
Yeah, he has been, which is shocking.
Unbelievable. Good Rod's rant of the day. We're excited about that one. As Rod said, that'll be a noon kickoff on CBS, Steelers and the Titans. One guy to keep an eye on who's going to be in there for Taylor at left tackle will be Ty Sombrello, and he's a guy that's
going to be big.
Yeah, he's going to have his work cut out for him. So we'll see what he looks like, and then also Bush, his replacement as well. All right, let's talk a little baseball coming up next. It is Game 3 of the World Series. Who has the advantage right now? We'll get into it up next. Welcome back, Triple Option, Country Music Friday. EK on his way, hopefully getting there pretty soon, to Lake Travis. Lake Travis Austin High on the horn tonight. We're going to be out at 6:30 for Flex ATX. They'll get you set up for everything that's going to be going on in Central Texas for high school football. And then we'll take you at 7, top of the hour, to Lake Travis and Austin High. Also going on tonight, and just after 7, will be Game 3 of the World Series in Arlington. We got the Dodgers and the Rays. Great pitching matchup. Rod, this may hurt you a little bit. Not that it didn't hurt as your team was facing them, but you've got Walker Buehler, the young stud, who's had a blister issue. And we talked about the TJ yesterday, which was 4 or 5 years ago, and maybe why he didn't go on full rest for Game 2, but the blister was probably a big part of that as well. He's going to be ready to go for Game 3 tonight, going up against Charlie Effin Morton.
I know. We put Effin in your name. That's so cool.
That's really cool.
I know. I wish that was that cool. I'm not.
And Astros fans who still use that all the time.
Oh, they
I mean,
do.
He's beat them with Tampa Bay now, and it's like, no,
he's still
CFN,
Charlie
Effin
Morton. No
That's
doubt
Charlie
about
Effin Morton.
I don't know if I really – and I know it's going to sound weird. I'm not that excited about watching this game. And I know
that.
It's a great storyline. No. And the reason is not because of what you think. I think it may end up being a boring start to the game because you got two damn good pitchers.
Okay.
And it may not be a lot of offense.
Right.
Right? Charlie Morton and Walker Buehler have combined for a 1.30 ERA this postseason heading into Friday's Game 3. According to Live Sports Bureau, that's the fifth lowest combined ERA entering a World Series matchup over the last decade.
Oh, man.
I don't know if it's going to be a lot of offense. I may tune in later.
Right.
I may DVR it and kind of fast forward through these scoreless innings or potential.
Get to
I mean?
The seventh when it's scoreless.
You know how I feel.
I know.
Listen, I respect no-hitters and scoreless outings by pitchers, and that's great. But it ain't really fun for me to watch. So it's one of those things I'm not that into. So I might, like I said, I might jump on this one pretty late. It's no hitters are great, and like I said, scoreless pitching is great, but it's
I don't think
it's entertaining.
Throwing 98 if Buehler's throwing 98,
I know you're gonna love it.
Oh, I'm
a
gonna
pitching
be
duel?
My pants are gonna be off.
I know
I'm gonna be all about it.
I can't get into it. But you know what? I'm a little. You know what? I should be into it because I like defensive football. Like I don't mind a defensive football game 10-3 or something.
10-7, you love
10-7 Super Bowl. I was the only one that liked it. Everybody else complained about it. I was like, that was a great
this
Super Bowl.
This is awesome.
You're right. I'm a little biased. You're right.
But I think you're not going to be alone. I think a lot of people will probably be recording it and then maybe just kind of tuning in late to see what's going on. But Rod's right. That's a good number there. I mean, this should be a pitcher's duel. Both these guys really spot their stuff well. Buehler is just a joy to watch. And so is Morton. You know, Morton's one of those guys. The reason Tampa Bay was able to sign him, they don't sign free agents, was because there was a thought that maybe not only did Houston turn him around so well, that can he do that somewhere else, but also he's too old, and he's not too old. I mean, that there's no doubt you look back on it, Rod, as an Astros fan, and that was a mistake.
Yeah. Oh, no. I
outside
totally
of him
agree.
Even beating y'all.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think looking back on it in retrospect, that is the case. It's interesting, though. I wonder if the Rays can continue that little offensive outburst there. Because that was an aberration
it
in
was.
Game 2. That was not what we've seen. Even when the Rays were beating the Astros, and I know they beat the Astros, they in a commanding way. They didn't blow them out or anything. But going into that game, in Game 2, they had a 190 batting average since the start of the ALCS, the Rays. They had gone 5 consecutive games without scoring more than 4 runs before going into the game. They had set a postseason record for hitting 230 or lower in 10 consecutive games. They usually don't win that way with offense, and they won with offense in that game, and I wonder it was that's something that's not going to be a trend. I mean, Lau is the prime example, right?
Yeah.
He had the slump of slumps.
Yeah.
And
he's their best hitter, but he'd been slumping all postseason.
Oh, man. He was, I think it was, what, 107 or something? Batting
yeah,
his last 56 at-bats.
It was right around 100.
Yeah. So I wonder if that is just symbolic or microcosm of how they are now they found their groove. They found their, if the Rays have found an offensive groove, they're going to win this series, guys.
No, they are.
They are.
Because they've got the better pitching. They've
yeah.
got, and I'll even say starters. Starters can be close, but they definitely have the best bullpen. We know that they've built their organization off of their bullpen. And I've got questions kind of with how LA is using their arms, especially with Dustin May. You've got a 100-mile-per-hour sinker guy, and you're messing with his head. They need to figure out a role for him.
Yeah.
He's such a young guy that he's definitely been out of sorts. Lau is huge for them, and I previewed that before game two. I said Brandon Lau's got to be the guy. And he hit two oppo home runs. He's a heavy pull hitter. That usually tells me, man, you're seeing the ball really well.
It's
like
amazing.
You're feeling it if you're going oppo and hitting two out twice. Another guy to watch out, he had one hit in the game two win. Austin Meadows is a really good player.
Okay.
Really good player. And this type of guy could get real hot. They're going to have that. If they don't, they're going to get outscored. Rob, that's why they were up 3-0 in that series. And y'all looked at me and I said, you're not out of it. The Astros aren't. Because it didn't feel like it was 3-0. Right?
Yeah.
The Rays were hitting 190 and scraping by with pitching and really good defense.
If not for Rosarena. They
where would
nothing.
They be?
Yeah,
they wouldn't be here right now.
They lost that series.
So Randy Arozarena is going to be important. Mentioned Meadows. Lau's got to be huge for them. They're going to have some guys, whether it's a Kiermaier or someone like that, step up. But I think right at the nail on the head, expect heavy pitching. If you like pitching and defense, you're going to get it tonight.
And Buehler, I mean, he's on extra rest, right?
Yes.
So I don't know this for sure, but I think everything I've read, Dave Roberts anticipates him going a little longer. At least he would like
okay.
to. He'd like
yeah, you
him
mentioned
to go,
that yesterday.
You know, into the fifth, past the fifth potentially, if he could do it. But if he doesn't, then you got to test the bullpen, and the bullpen got rocked. The Dodgers bullpen got rocked in game two.
It got rocked.
It
I know
did.
Jansen's kind of gotten his stuff together a little bit. I just mentioned May, who's got great stuff. You never know with Joe Kelly. They've got some arms, but that's not the position that they want to be in. Okay, about 30 minutes left. We're going to get back to football, give our final football thoughts and picks. We'll give you a little Texas Baylor, also some other college football and NFL action. As Rod started the show off with, thank God, hallelujah, it is football weekend.
Amen.
Up next.